Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's Thursday, October 14, 2021. Stephen St. John and Nate Buchady now joined by Buster Olney from ESPN. Buster, good morning. How are you?
What's going on?
Well, I had the Rays and the Brewers going to the World Series. That's what's going on. How am I doing?
As well as I am, because I had the Rays and the Brewers. And so I feel like, you know, at ESPN.com, you know, we'll go from round to round, and then they'll say at the end of each round, okay, give us an updated picks that you have, you know, if your picks have changed at all. And I lose heart, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like I'm going to make picks once, and then I kind of want to leave it alone. If I'm wrong, I want to live with that. I just, you know, I don't want to go in there and just keep taking a beating. It's like my fantasy football team this year. I just, you know, at some point, you just want to, like, set it aside and focus on other things like world peace.
Right. You know, it's just, so what's going wrong with you? Just lineup choices, injuries, what's happened to your fantasy football team?
Well, I let heart get in the way. When my draft came up, my draft spot came up at number two. You know, I could have taken Derrick Henry, but because I'm a Vikings fan, I took Dalvin Cook.
Oh, no.
And as you guys know, he's been on the field intermittently.
Right.
And it's crushing me. And I'm dying. My team is 0-5. My 17-year-old son is doing absolute victory laps around my complete failure. And he's threatening to release the name of my team out into the public for people to go and laugh at it at ESPN.com.
Here's what you do. You beat him to the punch. So when you're ready to go ahead and give us that name, just tell us on the air, and then it takes all the sting away from his threats.
No, I'm not doing that.
No.
I think I'm going to be subject to his extortion.
Right.
You just threaten to ground him. You know, I mean, I think that's the easiest way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you know, it's when they hit 17, that it's just a different feel.
Yeah, they laugh at you. Buster.
Right, exactly. Whatever. Go ahead. My friend's coming over to pick me up. Whatever, I'm leaving.
Right.
They realize you don't really have much control at all.
Oh, I have to stay in my room with my PlayStation? I mean, when you ground him, that's what they want to do anyway, is just stay in his room and either sleep or talk. Buster, let's get into tonight's big Game 5. The only Game 5 we get out of the divisional round, but I'll take it. Giants, 107 wins. Dodgers, 106 wins. All they need is one more win to advance and to eliminate their bitter rivals. What do you expect to happen tonight? It should be very dramatic.
Dramatic and low scoring, which will add to how tense this game is. As I've established, I have no credibility when it comes to making a pick.
Right.
And I got to be honest, even if I did have been making a lot of correct picks, I don't know if I necessarily have a great feel for what's going to happen tonight. There hasn't been a single lead change in this four-game series, which is really unusual. So it's not like it's a back and forth. You know, one team sees the advantage and then sort of ridden it out from that point. You know, as these games go along, the two starting pitchers are both excellent. Logan Webb for the Giants, you know, threw great the last time. He got the Dodgers to expand the strike zone. And on the flip side, Julio Urias, who's starting for the Dodgers, has demonstrated he's not afraid of anybody. Like, he's completely at ease in a big moment. You know, this is the one factor, and it's why I understand, you know, Vegas followers like Jake probably paying attention to the fact that this year the Giants have won two-thirds of their games in their home park, 54-27. That's daunting, and maybe it's decisive tonight.
So let's talk more about this this pitching matchup, too. You mentioned Julio Urias, who is not afraid of any big moment. A 20-game winner this year, by the way, which, like, that, how rare is that in today's Major League Baseball to win 20 games in a season? And what do you think, outside of just the mentality, makes him so difficult for the Giants to face tonight?
Well, he kind of reminds you of, you know, there have been, every once in a while, you see that funky left-hander who's coming from a different angle. He, you know, not very big, you know, comes at you almost like he's turning his back on the hitter when he goes into his motion. And he's got great movement on his stuff, but it really is about his mentality. You know, he when you speak to him, he just is like, bring it on. He's ready for whatever they throw at him, and he's been that way since he joined the Dodgers. I mean, shoot, you know, Kenley Jansen, with based on his statistics, is a borderline Hall of Famer. But you guys remember the World Series last year. It really became, in Dave Roberts' mind, the goal was to get the ball into Urias' hand late in games because he just ended it, right? He didn't just, you know, stop the Rays lineup. He completely stifled them like there was no chance. You know, on the flip side, it'll be very interesting. I mentioned the plate discipline. You know, after Webb made his start earlier in the series, he was talking about the game plan afterward. About how, you know, they had worked to get, you know, ahead in the count and then to get the Dodgers to chase pitches outside of the zone. And in the midst of getting me that explanation to reporters, Buster Posey, longtime catcher, like shushed him, like, stop talking. Because he was like, don't, you know, we're going to have to face these guys again, probably, is what Buster was thinking. That's going to be the key tonight, you know, getting Webb, seeing if Webb can get the Dodgers to have that same approach. Generally speaking, since Webb talked out loud about that, I think the Dodgers have been more disciplined. You know, we'll see if they do it in a spot tonight. Obviously, getting ahead in the count is going to be huge.
Buster Olney is our guest, and Buster, whoever wins this game will have to face the Atlanta Braves. And I enjoyed reading a quote from Ron Washington, who people remember nearly took the Texas Rangers to a championship, and now at least being mentioned possibly as a candidate for the San Diego Padres managerial position. But looking back, he's had some wonderful quotes this year. Back in August, after the Braves had lost to the Yankees, he said, hey, we're defending champions three times, so this blank comes to Atlanta. We were looking at their ass and elbows, and guess what now? They're looking at our ass and elbows. And so that's the kind of emotion that Ron Washington can bring to the table. And so yesterday, his tweet, when asked about playing either the Dodgers or the Giants, he said, both Goliaths, but these kids love to play. We don't have to be the best team. We have to be the best team today. You may be better than us over 162, but tonight, we getting in your ass. And so, Buster, Ron Washington, really a character of the game, and I like what he has to say, and now, because of those quotes, I'm rooting for the Braves.
And I got to tell you, I mean, his point is 100% right, that, you know, it really doesn't matter what's happened in the past. We've seen so many situations in the postseason history of baseball with a team perceived to be not perceived to be the best team, finds a way to win. You know, the last year in which I was truly a fan was in 1988. I was a huge Dodger fan growing up as a kid. Look, 1988, I could tell you, they were the fourth best of the four teams in that postseason. But they somehow, you know, they had lost 10 of 11 games the regular season to the Mets. They beat the Mets, and then they go on to the World Series, and they have the Kirk Gibson moment, and you know, with Oral Hershiser, and they beat the Athletics. They were not nearly as good as those other teams, but in that moment, they were the better team, to Wash's point. And if you look at it, the best team in baseball since the trade deadline, since the Braves, you know, responded to the Ronald Acuna injury by going out and adding outfielders, has been the Atlanta Braves. Guys, their record, regular season, postseason combined since the trade deadline, is 40-20. It's a team that has a lot of experience in the postseason. You know, they made it the NLCS last year. They have as strong a clubhouse culture as I think there is in baseball. You know, with Freddie Freeman, Ozzie Albies, a great young leader that they have at second base, terrific infield defense. You get Charlie Morton at the front of the rotation. You got Max Fried, who's been, you know, an ERA under two basically since the All-Star break. You know, they got a really good team. The big, you know, the soft underbelly of that team has been the back end of their bullpen. And I know this because my son is a big Braves fan, and I get angry texts about Will Smith, their closer, constantly. But he's been better. Like, he's been more efficient in the postseason. And if their bullpen's okay, heck yeah, they'd have a chance to beat either one of those teams. And about Ron Washington, I'm really curious to see what happens. You know, there was a thought the last time the Padres hired a manager that he was going to be that guy, that he was going to be hired. But at the end, A.J. Preller switched and brought in Jace Tingler. That didn't work out so well. It'll be interesting to see if the Padres revisit that and bring him in.
You know, you mentioned the Braves and what they did to try to make up for the loss of Acuna, which, I mean, look, he's one of the best players in baseball. And so it was interesting, their approach. They went after in numbers. They acquired Adam Duvall. They acquired Eddie Rosario. And, of course, we know in Kansas City, they acquired Jorge Soler, who had just been terrible at the plate most of the season. He got somewhat hot a couple of weeks before the trade deadline, but then once he got there, I don't know that they are where they're at without the addition of Jorge Soler, to the point where he was hitting leadoff for them, and he was very, yep, very good down the stretch. Just curious what you thought about their approach and all the moves that they made, because I along with a lot of people, I think, thought they were done when Acuna got hurt.
So Alex Anthopoulos, who's their general manager, reminds me so much of Dayton Moore, because it's not only about, you know, the analytics, it's not about what the numbers say. There's a lot of understanding of how human beings, you know, respond to trauma. And Alex has told me that in his time as the Blue Jays general manager, he said, when I first took that job, I had no understanding of clubhouse culture and how important that was. And then through guys like Mark DeRosa, he began to learn about that. And so Acuna goes down with that knee injury. Best player in the National League at that point, probably the front runner to win the MVP, either he or Tatis. And so Anthopoulos knows that his players are going to be devastated, right? They've already had taken a couple of big hits. And so the next day, he goes out and makes a deal for Jock Peterson. And what he told me was, look, I had to send a message to our players that we're not giving up. This is like a front office executive knowing the mindset of his players and feeling like, I need to run out a ground ball. It doesn't look good for us. You know, you can't replace somebody like Acuna, but I need to show my players that we are all in behind them. We've got their backs. They make the deal for Peterson that day. Then at the trade deadline, they trade for those three outfielders, Eddie Rosario and Soler, Adam Duvall. And I think that absolutely it had a big factor in how the Braves players were feeling about their chances. You know, if they know the front office is behind them, if they know ownership is behind them, they're adding players, then it's not just lip service to say, hey, we're still in this. And I think it was a major factor. And as I say, it reminds me so much of Dayton and his approach when the Royals won the World Series and the question about whether or not you go and trade for Cueto and Ben Zobrist and Dayton feeling like he owed it to those players at that time to give them the best possible chance. I love it. Cause I think it's, you know, mindsets like that in front offices becomes rarer and rarer as each of these years pass.
So Soler had to miss the last game because of a positive COVID test. What are the chances of his availability for this series? And if he can't play for a while, what does that do to the Braves lineup, in your opinion?
So I asked Anthopoulos yesterday about this, you know, sort of how this works, because the handling of the COVID, you know, related injury list stints is different than regular. Normally, at the beginning of a postseason series, the team announces its roster and it can't change, except in injuries. Well, and Soler starts out because he's not vaccinated. He's got to be out for 10 days. And so he's in, what, day three of those 10 days, means he's not going to be available at the outset. Alex told me yesterday that as soon as he gets through the 10 days and tests negative, he can rejoin. And in theory, that could be in game 6 and 7 of the NLCS if it gets that far. But because they don't, you know, there's not a sense of how much baseball activity he's going through, it's more likely he would wait to come back until the World Series. We'll see. You know, it's a hit. Because Soler, you know, no question, he was much better for them. I know he's been doing a lot of work with his hitting coach, his personal hitting coach, the guy who helped him make his changes to have that big season for the Royals. He reengaged, from what I understand, with that coach during the course of this year and was hitting a lot better. I suspect that they're probably having a lot of conversations now. I hope he's feeling okay. And if he is, he's probably out, you know, starting to take swings and preparing for the possibility he could be in the World Series.
Buster Olney is our guest. All right, Buster, on the American League side, the Astros now 5 straight appearances in the ALCS, which is remarkable, and they'll take on the Red Sox. But this isn't what I expected. I thought the Rays would be there, I picked the Astros over the White Sox. That wasn't that big of a surprise to me, but the Red Sox. I thought they were done. Like, I didn't think they did enough the trade deadline, especially compared to what the Yankees did. I do love Kyle Schwarber, and I wanted the Royals to sign him when he was a free agent this offseason. Didn't. He went to the Nationals, had a hell of a year, and then gets traded to the Red Sox. And he's been a very interesting addition in the way you've utilized him. They've utilized him as well. What about the Red Sox and the Astros and what you expect from this ALCS?
Yeah, the Red Sox don't make any sense, to your point. You think about it, with an hour to go in the regular season they were losing to the Nationals, and they were down 5 runs or 4 runs in the late innings, and it looked like that they were going to have to play the Blue Jays just to have a chance at the second wild card game. And now they're spraying champagne on each other in Fenway Park the other night, going crazy. They beat the Yankees in the wild card game after coming back against the Nationals that day. And then they played so well in that series against the Rays, the team that was perceived to be the best in the American League. There's no doubt that Alex Cora, their manager, is a huge factor. In an era in which teams generally feel like that managers don't make that much of a difference, people who I speak to in the game who are steeped in analytics say, yeah, okay, well, that doesn't apply in Alex's case. He clearly is a great manager, connects with players, makes the right changes, and the players respond to his competitiveness. You know, they're 15-4 under Alex in the postseason. You know, he's undefeated in potential elimination games. That's pretty remarkable, and I'll give you guys, just a little bit of insight into sort of how he handles a tough moment. Because they worked with an ESPN, if something goes, he has a bad situation that pops up, I might text him and say, hey, tough news about this, hang in there, that sort of thing. So I texted him after Chris Sale tested positive for COVID, and within 0.2 seconds, guys, he texts back. And I know Alex well enough to know the tone that he sent it back with. The answer was, we'll be fine. He didn't want my pity. He didn't want any of that. His attitude was, we're going to find a way. You know, the heck with all that negativism. We're going to find a way. And then about a minute later, text again, hey, thanks for your thought. He let down the sheen of competitiveness and then said thanks to someone who knows him. I think that absolutely rubs off on players. You guys see him in front of the dugout before or during games. I think that everything you see is exactly how he and the other players feel about each other. It's awesome, and it's a force. It'll be very interesting to see the byplay between Alex and all the Astros players that he knows so well from the time he was their bench coach.
Hey, Buster, what did you make of the whole situation with Abreu getting hit by the pitch at the end of that last game between the White Sox and Astros and what Tony La Russa had to say about it?
I thought it was silly. I also, it's not a surprise. You know, Abreu's a leader on the White Sox, and Tony was protecting his players, but he went a bridge too far when he talked about, and I'm paraphrasing here, I don't have the quote in front of me, where he essentially said if the Astros don't admit they were hitting him on purpose, then they have no integrity. I thought he took it too far. Look, forget what an idiot sports writer like me thinks. During the game for Fox were A.J. Pierzynski and Adam Wainwright, who not only know something about, retaliation situations, but Adam knows something about Tony La Russa. And neither of them saw any intent on the part of Kendall Graveman, who they felt like it was more of a case of a pitcher who was struggling to find his release point, and he hits him. And that's, as they both said, Tony protecting his player, okay, going out there complaining, okay. But when you go post-game the way that he did and, gets all torchy and flame-throwing at the Astros, I thought that was too far. And I'd say this, too. The Astros players And look, in social media, people can't stand them, and Correa and Altuve and Alex Bregman and the others will never overcome in public perception, you know, because of what happened with the sign stealing scandal. No one can deny the toughness in these guys. Like, these guys are great postseason player. You can see Correa growing up before our eyes.
Buster, final question. What are the Yankees doing with Aaron Boone?
Their inclination of Hal Steinbrenner is to bring him back, but it's a complicated situation because his contract expires in 2 weeks, which means he's kind of had some leverage here, even in after a season which is that is disappointing. So I don't know what's going on, but the fact that there's been a delay in the resolution tells you that there's a back and forth. And so, you know, if the Yankees are going to Aaron Boone and saying, look, we want to give you a one-year extension, Boone is in a position where if that was an acceptable offer, and I've had other people tell me he should get a 2 or 3 year deal, then he could say, you know what, I'm going to go talk to the Padres, or I'm going to go talk to some other teams. You know, if he says, look, those coaching changes you want me to make are not acceptable to me, he's got some leverage. And the fact that we're not hearing a final decision on it tells you that the outcome is uncertain as to which way this is going to go. I think he'll be back as manager, but I don't know that for sure.
Buster, thanks for talking baseball with us. We'll talk to you next week.
See you guys. Have fun.
That's Buster Olney from ESPN, our baseball insider. You know what? We will have fun. Thank you, Buster. We'll have fun with Adam Kaplan talking football after this on WHB.